You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 16th of March. Dante Exum returns. We'll break that down. We should talk about Joe Ingles more. You're right, we should. Greg Anthony on a national podcast is completely inaccurate, and it kind of bums me out. Playoff look from last night and a quick pack Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you expertise, insight, geeky numbers, a little look behind the curtains as well. As the Jazz win their 20th of their last 22 games last night in a simple, easy blowout of the Phoenix Suns. Third segment of the show today, we will look at the playoff situation as well as PAC. We'll talk about, look at last night's game in segment one and in segment two. What are you talking about, Greg Anthony? We're going to expose him for just blatant inaccuracies. Kind of pisses me off. All right. Dante Exum's return last night, we now can talk a little bit about the process the Jazz went through to get him there. And I think this is a really interesting sign of how well run the organization is. Mike Elliott and his medical staff did an amazing job. I chose not to talk about it till now. I thought it was just still as good a story and frankly didn't know how confidential. So on our last road trip, what the Jazz did was they brought their two-way players up. If you noticed, Eric McCree and George Niang, both the two-way players were up for that whole road trip. Remember, they can only spend 45 days up. So they were up so that then whenever we were – actually, and game days, that they could play two-on-two and three-on-three with Dante Exum. So on that last road trip, we practiced each day, and each day was a day for Dante to play three-on-three. But it's a really unique use of using the two-way players so that you're on the road, you're getting time, we're playing every other day. You don't want to have your regular players having to play in those setups. So you have Tony Bradley, and AB got some time and there wasn't playing much, and Neto played a little bit, and then Niang and McCree and Dante, and there's your three-on-three matchup. And so you're using those players to be able to get that time. And then the way that now publicly everyone knows, because they had to announce it, they then used the 2 days in between games, game day and the next day, where Dante then went and played extended 5-on-5 games with the Salt Lake Stars. They didn't move the two-way players up and down, I don't believe, for those games. But they played an extensive 5-on-5. It's a really good way to use the G League and the new rules as a way to help rehabilitate a player. So I thought it was just really, really smart use of the rules and the systems by the Jazz. Dante looked fine last night. Didn't finish at the rim, but he attacked. Quinn said he wanted him to compete. Missed his one outside shot. I don't think he's ever going to be, with his shooting motion, a guy who makes contested threes or contested shots. His shot's pretty far out in front of him. He's going to have a hard time getting that off unless he's got space. He's never had a pull-up jumper, and we'll see if he develops one and he shows one. But, he was fast. He was going full speed. Quinn wants to, at the beginning of the year, wanted to see a tempo change out of him. I thought you saw that. He's got that elite first step. He can get on top of the rim. Defensively, I think he was fine. The team did struggle badly at the end of the first and third quarters. I'm not sure that was necessarily Dante related, but they missed 10 of their or 11 of their final 12 shots at the end of the first, and their final 5 at the end of the third. So there definitely was some getting used to each other. Great setup, got a bunch of time, blowout win. So great to see. Congratulations to Dante for the incredible work that he put in to get to that point. Super defensive effort again by the Utah Jazz. The fourth best of the season. The Detroit game was the third best of the season. The Memphis game was the fifth best of the season. The Magic game was the second best. When we play bad offensive teams, they're dead right now. The Jazz have held 5 of their last 6 opponents to a defensive rating below 90. Below 90. The league average is 106. I believe the Jazz have moved into second in the league in defensive rating. The numbers of what the Jazz are since the streak started, or, you know, whether you just want to go to since Rudy came back, wherever you want to start it, it's not actually close what they're doing compared to the rest of the league. They are feasting right now on some lesser teams. That's certainly true and worth mentioning. The defensive rating for the season is now 101.9 and has Boston in the crosshairs to become the number one defense in the league. If you go to January 19th, when Rudy came back, and remember, let's not only talk about Rudy, the defense when Rudy's off the floor is actually under 100 also. The Jazz defense since January 19th is now a 96.3, which is the best in the league is a 101.9. The second best in the league is a 101.9. So the Jazz are more than 5 points better than the next best in the league. They're over 11 points better than league average. Putting that in perspective, Houston's offense is a 114.3 in that same time period. That's a little less than 7 points better than average. I think we're average, actually, about 107.6, maybe 107. So we're 10 points better. Houston and the Warriors are 6.5, 7 points better. And frankly, the difference between the Jazz and the second best defense is getting close to the difference between Houston and the Warriors and an average offense. It's really stunning how great this team defensively is and the way they are shutting people down. I got a tweet from someone or a message somewhere. I thought it was just interesting. We should talk more about Joe Ingles. And I was like, you know what? You're probably right. We should talk more about Joe Ingles. He's, in one sense, he's become a playmaking Kyle Korver. He went 4 of 9 from 3 last night. He still leads the NBA in 3-point shooting. But, and so in that sense, and he took 9 last night. Remember when we used to talk about whether he would take enough? So in that sense, he really has become Kyle Korver. He's the best 3-point shooter in the league. He's got great gravity. He's willing to take them. He's taken 5 or more threes in every game since the 9th of February. He has taken 4 or more threes in every game the Jazz have played since, I believe, the first 15th of January. I mean, just that's the subtle thing on this streak since Rudy came back, that Joe's taking a 3 at almost taking 5 threes a game now. Since the streak started, if we go back to Detroit when the Jazz won 20 of 22, Joe's taking 6 threes a game. So you've got a Kyle Korver threat now with the amount he's shooting, and he's at 49% in that time period. So he's increased his usage and gotten better. And then he's a playmaker. He's getting 4 rebounds, 5 assists, getting a steal, 15 points a game. It's really remarkable. Last 22 games, so quarter of the season, Joe Ingles, 15 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. But more importantly, 51% shooting from the field, 49% from 3, and taking 6 of his 10 shots as threes. So his effective field goal percentage in that time period, roughly, give me a little bit of roughly here, I'm kind of piecing this together, is around 65%. It's incredible. And it's probably as into this winning stretch as the Rudy's defense and everything else. And it's really, really important. And then Quinn's made some alterations in how they're playing things. So he and Derek are coupled together more and more on the pick and roll. That has been our best pick and roll all year long. Joe Ingles, Derek Favors pick and roll is at 0.98 points per play. Rubio's best combination is actually Udo and then Favors and then Gobert. Mitchell's best combination is Udo, then Gobert, and then Favors. And Joe's best combination is Favors, and that's the best we have on the team. That's for the season. If you, again, go kind of and look at this January 19th date of when Rudy returns and call that our AD and our BC of Jazz franchise, then it's a little different. But in that time period, what's interesting is, you know, Donovan's run off about 480 picks, Rubio's run off 400, and Joe's run off 300. So there's great variation. In that time period, Ingles and Favors are at 1.2 points per pick and roll. I don't know if I can run this. I can't imagine there's many combinations better in the NBA. Derek and Donovan are really struggling, and so Quinn has made that adjustment. Rubio and Favors and Rubio and Gobert are both figuring it out. So it's a nice adjustment there by Quinn. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Tyson, by the way, was in the Murdoch suite over at the Jazz game. When you go by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646, go by and mention to Blake that the Jazz are pretty good. The Jazz have won 20 of their last 22, and he might want to come to a game sometime. Feel free to just drop that in. Like, see Blake and be, hey, by the way, I'm here to look at a car. Because of the 100,000-mile Hyundai assurance, because of the Murdoch no-regrets promises, but you probably should head into a Jazz game at some point. Your kid likes to go to games. They're 120 in their last 22. Go after it. The new Kona is in. The new kind of – the smaller SUV comes in at under 25 grand, it looks like, on all the prices. Pretty incredible. I'm driving the Sonata right now, really enjoying it. Nice car. Great spacing, smooth rides, got all the safety features, was driving the Santa Fe before that, loved it. So check it out. If you don't have Hyundai on your list, I think you'll be really impressed by the brand and the quality and the pricing you can get. $5,000 currently off a 2018 Santa Fe Sport. I'm going to call them up and see if there's any 2017 still floating around. So I need to get one. All right, that is Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Go give Blake a hard time for not coming to enough Jazz games and find out why Tyson is using all the tickets. Find out. Maybe Ben's using them. Who knows? It is 4646 South State Street. Murdoch Hyundai, also located in Linden. All right, so Greg Anthony and Seiko Smith did a Hangtime podcast, and I like Seiko. It's not actually on my regular podcast listening, but they were going to talk Rookie of the Year. And so I thought I'd listen. And in fairness to both of them, they're very nice about the Jazz in a good deal of the stuff. And they talk about it. You can't really be anything else right now. And they give the Jazz their due. And then they get to Donovan. And then Greg Anthony has the strangest take on the Rookie of the Year. And I got to share it with you because it really bummed me out.
They've been nipping at the bud. And now they're finally inside of the top eight. And it makes me think about that Rookie of the Year race that we kind of handed to Ben Simmons early, GA. I don't know that the Kia Rookie of the Year award is locked up to go to Philly right now.
It's locked up, man.
If Donovan Mitchell, look, if the Jazz make the playoffs, does Donovan Mitchell at least make you hesitate? I mean.
No. Let me tell you why. No, and again, I love Donovan Mitchell. I know who's hesitating a lot right now. Is the team that took guard and put shooting guard ahead of him.
Right.
Detroit, you know.
Yeah.
Charlotte. There's some teams right now kicking themselves. And there may be some front office shakeups because of that. And I love him. But the thing about Ben Simmons and the reason I think he's a Rookie of the Year is he's been great from day one.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he was, you know, he just came on and had a great second half. From the first moment he stepped on the court to start the season, Ben Simmons has been there. So, basically, he's been that all year long. Now, you could argue Donovan Mitchell has been as good the second half of the season, but you got to add up both halves.
Right. He's averaging 20.6 points, 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.4 steals since All-Star.
It's kind of a two-man race. And, again, there are going to be a lot of people. Donovan Mitchell, and he's going to deserve all the attention and the accolades. Again, I'm not – hey, no, I love Donovan Mitchell. I think he's just got that it factor.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that intimidating physical ability, but he's also very skilled. And when you merge that combination, man, that's where you have a chance to be a truly special player in this league. So I'm not discounting him at all. It's just a matter of, to your point, Philly's right in the mix of the playoffs as well.
Yeah.
They got a chance to have home court in the first round.
No, you're right.
They're right there as well. I mean, both teams have been impressive. Both players have been impressive. And again, my big thing, the reason I lean towards Ben Simmons is simply because it's Rookie of the Year. not rookie of the half year.
I mean, that's just, that is such garbage. It's just fundamentally not true. And for a national analyst who's on NBA TV, who spends, who's an important voice to be saying something like that, that's just not true, is really discouraging to me. I mean, that's just, basically, I think I edited it out. He says, no one really knew. He wasn't the top. Like, because Donovan was a surprise, he shouldn't be talked about. He dropped 22 on the 28th of October. By the way, the crazy one is in our fifth game of the year, we lose to Phoenix. He plays 12 minutes. Like, okay, he wasn't there in the first seven games. He scores 10-2-2-19-2. 22-8. So he struggled for seven games. The kid struggled for seven games. He then goes to Portland and drops 28. And since that game, in the last 59 games, he's scoring 21 points. He's getting four rebounds and four assists a game, shooting 45% from the field and 35% from the field. How can you tell me that he's only a second half of the year player? How do you get away with that comment? Such a bummer. He struggled for seven games. Now, I'll be honest on the rookie of the year thing. You're probably not going to hear me go way out for Donovan Mitchell for rookie of the year, other than that he deserves to be in the conversation, because I think it's pretty hard to say Ben Simmons doesn't. And I every time I see someone trying to discredit Ben Simmons, it's laughable. The guy's incredible. And I think going to might be magic. I mean, what he's doing this year is mind blowing. Okay, he can't shoot from it doesn't matter. So I don't know that Donovan per se should win rookie of the year. I think Donovan deserves to be in a credit, in a conversation. I would love it if it went Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, and they split, because I think they're both very deserving of rookie of the year. They're both having remarkable seasons. That, you know, you can try to pick at Ben Simmons that he's only, what, 58 of 170 or something from outside 10 feet, but, like, why? Like, the guy's taking 377 shots at the rim. Like, if we could get a shot at the rim every single time, we would, and he does. So I'm not here to try to, you know, do a Donovan has to be rookie of the year thing. I think he deserves it. Donovan's been amazing. But be accurate. Be accurate. Don't go on as a well-respected voice in the NBA, who's on a national show, and just be wrong. Like, I don't want to make too big a deal of it, but just be wrong. That's what that was. The other one I want to get off my chest, and I get it a little bit, is in every press conference that Quinn Snyder ever has, he gets asked about how much Donovan Mitchell has stunned them and surprised them and how you never knew this was coming. Okay, the fact that he could be at one point in this league an MVP candidate, which I do think he's showing some signs or possibility, that is probably somewhat more than we ever anticipated. On the other end, he worked out, and Dennis Lindsay told anyone who was in the building that if they talked about it, they were getting fired. And I was one of those people, and that sucked. And we traded a former 12th pick of a draft and a future first-round pick to get him. So it certainly wasn't that we didn't have any idea that this kid was going to be great. Right? I mean, seriously, it's not as though we didn't know at all. Does that make sense? Like, it's a little, Quinn's really graceful in answering this question every single time, but it's every, and even, I think I cut this part out, you know, Even Greg Anthony says, I saw him in Louisville. I thought he was going to be, but nobody knew this was coming. The Jazz had no idea they were getting this. Like, that's, to me, a little much. Because the idea that we had no idea this was happening seems a stretch, considering the fact that we traded a pretty good player in Trey Lyles. We'll see what happens. He's not getting any time anymore. And a future first, or a first of that draft pick. It's not like we just went and drafted him and, like, we got him. I don't know. Thought I'd share that with you. At GAnthony50 if you want to pile on like I have. Seems like that bothered me. All right, maybe I should let that go. Maybe I shouldn't be that petty. But I am. We just refinanced our mortgage, and we did it with InterCap Lending. They're a long-time company, 40 years in the business. They've come to Utah. They've employed a bunch of people here. It's great. Steve Carter is the guy who's set to help you out as a Locked On Jazz listener. He'll do two things for you. One, he'll help you through the process immediately. And then what he always talks about is they try to make mortgages as simple as ordering a pizza. There's a little government regulation more than going and getting your Papa John's Jazz 50, but that you can get today, and you've been able to get in 20 of the last 22 games. But they do make it pretty simple. I did it in the middle of the season when I'm at my busiest and never get anything done, which is a great tribute to how easy InterCap Lending makes it. The other thing they'll do for you is if you do a loan with them, they'll take care of your appraisal. That's a lot of money. So that's a great deal. They'll take care of your appraisal for you if you do a loan with them. 385-800-8528. 385-800-8528. My personal experience with them, top notch. I can attest to that for you. It was really remarkable. Now, if you're having any difficulty with any loan, they're a direct lender, so they can help you out. If you're self-employed, have a bunch of business assets, have multiple properties, things like that, let them take a look at your loan. If your loan's gotten turned down for some reason, or you're just having a difficulty going through one of the big banks, call them at 385-800-8528. If you're a vet, they do great programs. For vets, that's a lot of their volume. They have good VA pricing. 385-800-8528. Make sure you tell them you're Locked On Jazz so that you can get your appraisal for free and find out how ordering a mortgage will be like ordering a pizza. It just won't taste as good. That is InterCap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, let's go to the playoff picture and then a short pack version today. Last night, a lack of surprises again. San Antonio beat the Pelicans. San Antonio is a 65% to win that game. That's actually San Antonio's second win in the 65%. So San Antonio has this stretch here where they play Orlando, New Orleans, Minnesota, Golden State, Washington, and Utah at home. For them to stay in the playoff picture, I really felt they had to win four, if not five, of those games. Otherwise, they're in trouble. They've gotten they got the first two. So now they have four more. Timberwolves, Golden State, Washington, Utah. Utah on a back end of a back-to-back. They have a win probability of 60% except for Golden State, but that's before Golden State had all their injuries. So they're probably favored in the 60% range in all of them. If they get them all, San Antonio's right back in the mix, and another team doesn't drop off. If San Antonio drops two of them, they go back into the group that might drop off. New Orleans, with that loss, that's actually not that big a deal. I actually think we wanted New Orleans to win last night. I know Andy Larson tweeted out we wanted San Antonio, and I don't know that he's wrong, but I just think it's such a statement of where this playoff race is that I actually had it the other way. New Orleans loses that one. New Orleans had won two games this year where they were over 60% against, or 30% against Milwaukee and the Clippers, but they've now dropped a few against Washington and Utah that they probably should have won. So they're kind of just right in the middle of things. Clippers lost last night, but that was an 18% game. They were supposed to, so that doesn't change anything. Utah won last night. That doesn't change anything. Here's the concern for the Jazz on all these projection systems. The Jazz are supposed to win almost every game they play the rest of the way. The Jazz have only six games left where their win probability is less than 60%, and they probably have to win a few of those. So when you look at these models, there's very little chance for the Jazz to go higher than where the models have them, because they're already projecting the Jazz to win every game, where everybody else can make up games. That's what makes this tricky. I still look at this and think that we're, you know, we're kind of end up where I thought, which is 48 wins. Let me, I'm one day off this because I didn't do it yesterday. But I had projected out kind of where I thought everybody would be on March 15th. So that's, you know, maybe that's actually today because this is the 16th. So I had Minnesota at 40 wins. That's right where they are. I had San Antonio at 38. They're actually at 39. I had Oklahoma City at 42. They're at 41. I had Denver at 40. They're at 38. So that's a considerable little change there. I had Portland at 38. They're at 42. Portland's running away with this thing. They won again last night. I had New Orleans at 38. They're at 39. So they're up one. That's why I have them now at 47. The Clippers were at 35, are now at 37. And I had the Jazz at 37. They're now at 39. So even in my projections where I had everybody at 47 wins, along the tying at 47, you got to have 40. People are ahead of where I thought they were going to be. Minnesota has, we could, maybe next week we'll walk through it after this weekend where everybody is and what they have specifically left. But Minnesota, who's interesting because they're 40 and 29. I'm going to look at both them and the Pels first in a second, sense of moving up. So we're a game behind Minnesota, who's at 5. We're a game and a half by Oklahoma City. I thought I'd just look way up right here for a second. So Minnesota has 9 games left that are should wins or certain wins. They have 2 pick-ems left, and they have 2 unlikelies left. I think it's fair to assume that they're going to win 2 of those final 4, and then of their 9 final ones, they win 7 of those. So they, I had them winning at 50. They're at 49. I just don't think we can get to 49. Oklahoma City has 2 certain wins and 3 should wins left. That's 5 of those. They just haven't lost any of those yet. And they have 5 pick-ems left. And they have 1 unlikely and 1 no chance. So I think it's probably fair to project that they win 3 of their pick-ems or unlikelies of their 6. And they haven't lost one of those other ones yet, but let's say they finally slip and lose one of them, so they win 7 more. They're at 48. They get to 48. That's exactly where I projected them. So both Minnesota and Oklahoma City are at 50 and 48 where I thought they would be. Someone's got to drop out. We need 2 teams to drop out. I mean, this is... Or the Jazz, because the Jazz getting to 47 is playing pretty darn well. I feel like you want me to do another team. All right, let's look at New Orleans. Like, who's dropping out? Denver's obviously in trouble. New Orleans has 3 should wins left, 60 to 80% games, and 1 game left against that's a certain win. So they have 4 of those. They have 4 pick'em games left. And then this is where their life gets difficult. They have 4 unlikelies and 2 no chances. So if they're not, say, 0 chance on the no chances, that would be mammoth for them to pull one of those off. Let's say they get 2 of their unlikelies, 2 of their pick'ems, because teams are going to overperform, and we'll give them 3 of their 4 should wins. That gives them 7 more wins, and that gets New Orleans at 46. So that's New Orleans out at 46. Denver likely out as well, and thus 47 still to get in. Denver has no certain wins left. They have 6 should wins left, no pick'ems left, 5 unlikelies, and 1 no chance. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, give them 3 of those 6 unlikelies or no chances. And let's give them 4 of the should wins. It's 67%. It's probably a little low. That's 7 wins. Denver's at 45. That's even being generous. So that's the two. That's how you get your two to drop out. You get 47 to get in. But it's going to be hard, I just showed, to catch Oklahoma City, Minnesota, or Portland at this point. So then the next question really gets to be, can you stay ahead of the Spurs and the Clippers? All right, might as well finish this out. Spurs have one certain left, four should wins, four pick'ems, and four unlikelies. Say they win two of the unlikelies, we'll do two of the pick'ems, and they win four of the other finals. Spurs get eight more wins. Spurs come in at 47 that way. I think they probably finish with 48, but I've said 47 the whole time. So Spurs at 47, Jazz have that tiebreaker. That's how you get above them. Nothing's really changed in my projection except for maybe Denver falling out so you don't have the multiple team tie, but Denver's not a bad team for us to have fallout. But Minnesota's still coming in at 50. Oklahoma City coming in at 48. Portland is probably exceeding their 48 now. New Orleans at 46. Denver at 45. So the last one's the Clippers. Clippers have one certain. They have nine should wins left. And they are much better. They have one pick'em. And they have five unlikelies. Let's say they get three of the six pick'ems and unlikelies. Say they win, they have seven of the nine should wins. Plus they have they have 11 more wins left. Clippers come in at 48. So you have the Jazz and the Spurs tied for 7-8 at 47. If we're trying to get to six, we're going to have to beat the Clippers. But I think we're already projected to beat the Clippers. Yeah, we're already projected to beat the Clippers. So we have to beat the Clippers to get the tiebreaker and then have to gain another one somewhere else. All kind of wild. All right, quick run through on PAC because I promised you that today. Let's just do – I've put the numbers in, haven't done the sorts. Let's do last 10. I'll just do the quick top five offensive players. I'm sure they're not that different unless Rudy's really climbed up the ladder or Anthony Davis has. And then we'll do the last 10 games in the Jazz. Top 10 PAC players. PAC is points above average created. It is how I judge offensive players. Steph Curry is number one at 4.6. Kevin Durant, 3.6. James Harden, 3.4. Karl Anthony Towns, now the fourth most impactful offensive player, 3.0. LeBron, 5. Anthony Davis, 6. Kyrie Irving, 7. Clint Capella, 8. And Rudy Gobert, 9th. Damian Lillard, 10th. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 11. This all matches up, right? Like, everything makes sense, and then you wonder why Capella and Rudy are in there, because they're really very valuable. DeAndre Jordan, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, Kevin Love, they'll be a big addition. Montrezl Harrell, underrated for the Clippers. Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, Julius Randle. It's a really interesting free agent. Julius Randle's playing great. He's put it together, figured out how to play, and he's efficient. Kyle Korver, Nikola Jokic, Jonas Valanciunas, J.J. Redick, and then Joe Ingles comes in right with J.J. Redick. It's a pretty interesting comparison. Joe does a lot more ball handling than J.J. Redick, but interesting there. All right, for the Utah Jazz, you have Rudy Gobert and Joe Ingles obviously leading the way for the season. Derek Favors, 0.6, Thabo, 0.5, Jonas, 0.2, Epe, 0.1. Royce O'Neal's a minus 0.3. Jay Crowder's a minus 0.4 for the season. Donovan's a minus 0.4. AB's a minus 0.5. Dante's a minus 0.7 after last night. It's only one night. And Ricky Rubio's a minus 1.1. Top 10 hottest players in the NBA, according to PAC. Steph Curry's only played 7 games, but he's 5.7. James Harden, 4.6. Kyrie in his 8 games, 4.5. Karl Anthony Towns, 4th. Rudy Gobert in the last 10 games is a 4-pack. Dwight Howard follows him, Kevin Durant, DJ Augustine in Orlando, Montrezl Harrell, Nikolai Jokic after that, putting it on. Julius Randle is at a 3.1 over the last 10 games, been brilliant. Eric Gordon clicking in Houston, 2.9. Dario Saric, hot in the last 10 games for Philadelphia, worth keeping an eye on. LeBron, 2.8. Miles Turner playing brilliantly in Indiana. Damian Lillard on fire in Portland. Taj Gibson, very good. Kentavious Caldwell Pope has been good for the Lakers. That's a little bit of a surprise. Andre Iguodala is warming up at a 2.2 in the last seven games. Tobias Harris, Brooke Lopez, both playing great. And Otto Porter and Larry Nance being mentioned there. Who are the coldest players? I always kind of like that because you always get a surprise or two here. All right, coldest player, Dennis Smith, rookie, is very cold. Zach LaVine struggling in Chicago, minus 3.1. Tyler Dorsey in Atlanta, minus 3. Victor Oladipo, minus 2.9. There's our surprise. Emmanuel Mudiay, minus 2.9. Paul George, minus 2.8. Paul George always been incredibly inconsistent. Carmelo Anthony, minus 2.7. Elfrid Payton, who we saw last night, minus 2.7 because the hair's in the way. Spencer Dinwiddie, minus 2.6. Ricky Rubio, for all of our thoughts on how well he's playing, last 10 games, minus 2.5. Interesting. He is playing well. He's just not shooting well. Thaddeus Young, minus 2.5. Frank Ntilikina, minus 2.2. Lance Stevenson, right in that as well. Dennis Schroeder falls into that. J.R. Smith in this group. Rodney Hood. So that kind of wraps us up. Utah Jazz, last 10 games. And then we'll wrap up pack and the show. Rudy, 4.0. Joe Ingles, 1.5. Derek Favors, 1.2. Neto was even. Jonas has been even. Donovan Mitchell, minus 0.3. Alec, minus 0.4. Dante, he had last night. Jay Crowder, minus 1.3 in his last 10 games. Royce O'Neal, minus 1.5. Royce is shooting 28% and 22% from three in the last 10 games. And Ricky Rubio, minus 2.5. Shooting 37%, 28% from three. Going to the line 11 times. 11% of his possessions, which usually carries him through. He's also averaging 6 rebounds and 7 assists in that time period. All right, that is Pack Friday. That is all sorts of fun stuff. Long Friday show. Hope you enjoy it for the weekend. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you Monday.